Oh, we had to work with everybody worked together.
Was there any social?
If we had any racial problems, it certainly wasn't shown. The problems we had is everybody had to work, and everybody worked on the mango. We had mixed people who worked on the mango. The mango is where you iron sheets and pillow slips. The supervisor on that over those mangoes, she was white. Her name was Marty. I never forget it. On the shirt line where I worked, our supervisor was black, Elsie. But Elsie and Lottie had worked at that laundry for years. They should have owned it. And they was almost just like sisters. You know, they talked and they, you know, all the time. Those of us who worked on there, it wasn't about white and black. Right. It was about green. When you don't get paid at 12 o'clock on Saturday. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And so we have black women on one end folding the sheet. So you fold on this end, and I fold on that end. It would have nothing to do with it. You had black women and white women feeding into the mango. You had black folks inspecting them as they fold them. Mm-hmm. White folks, it ain't go by you white and you do this and you black and you do that. Do you have any experience? The answer is yes or no. If it's no, lot of training you had to work, don't care what color you are. Hmm. If it's yes, then that's your choice over here. That's over here. If this mango breaks down, everybody over here, I don't care who it is, come over here. Let's work and do this one together. Come time for rest, lunch, everybody stop. Payday, everybody line up. It didn't run white over here, black over here. It had nothing to do with it.
So there weren't two different pay lines?
No. Wasn't no different toilets. Wasn't no white toilet and a black toilet. Wasn't no white drinking fountain or black drinking fountain lying in that plant.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, during the war here, in fact, I want to ask you about the war plant. In L.A., when the executive order came down to desegregate all the war plants, first they didn't want to hire black women. Then they said, well, there are no jobs for them. And then, do you remember the Reverend Clayton Powell, not Clayton Powell, Clayton Russell? He organized the Negro...
You mean here?
Mm-hmm.
No.
He organized the Negro Victory Committee to put pressure to give jobs to black women. Then they said, well, there's no training. So they threatened to march on the Board of Education. Then they said, we can't have the white women and the black women work together because there's only one bathroom. This is in L.A.
In Jacksonville, Arkansas, I worked in the war plant there. The name of the company was Ford, Bacon, and Davis. That was what on my paycheck. I never will forget it. I sit on the assembly line with all folks. And I was an inspector, and I was black.
And was it one bathroom for all the women? Or were the bathrooms segregated?
Now, about that one, I don't remember. I don't remember the wall plant, because that was so not big. But I do remember the laundry. And I don't know no black bathroom restroom and no white restroom. I don't remember that one. I don't remember.
That's
that.
Interesting.
And I know all the water fountains was the same. That I do know.
Yeah. Now, how about at lunchtime or break time? Was there any?
We sit down and talk. Play cards. Them were play cards. I never played cards. We sit down and talk. Joke with each other. Because you had some buddies, you had some white folks that they was buddy with white folks, and you had some black folks was buddy with black folks. Then you had some white folks talk to anybody, and you had some black people talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. That's where it was. It wasn't a black-white issue. A black folks sit over here, and the white folks sit over there. If you wanted to sit back here with the white folks and talk, you did that. If white folks want to come back over in here, you did that. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And see, the man that owned the plant was Jewish. Now, he wasn't interested in what you felt about each other. Get his work out.
Right. Make him some money.
Let's make him some money. That's what it is. His name, Julian Alexander, just care nothing about what your color was. Make the money, get the laundry out, and get the Kenyan out. That was a joke.
Do you think at that time in Little Rock it was unusual to have a desegregated workplace like that? It was a pretty
good. No, it was like that in all the lodges. That wasn't the only laundry I worked in. I had worked in two lodges. Majestic Laundry and Imperial Laundry was the biggest laundries in Little Rock. And it never was a black shirt line operator and a white shirt line operator.
Hmm.
Or a black pants, you know, if you could iron pants, you could iron pants. That's what color you was.
It's interesting because I'm convinced that the laundries in the North in that time period, even later than that, were much more segregated.
The others might have been segregated, but Julian Alexander didn't handle segregation. I'm telling you, the man wanted his work done. He couldn't care less who you was. He was stone Jewish. A Jew, so no. He did not care. Get the work out. Mm-hmm. He had, now what he didn't have, there was no black drivers.
Mm.
You know, I don't know whether that was preferred or not, mm-hmm. but there was black mechanics, because my brother that just died was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the white mechanic, the head man was white, mm-hmm. but he was just as greasy as my brother was. You couldn't tell when he come out on them car, what color he was. He was black too. And the washerman was black. I don't remember seeing a white washerman, but I've seen those men be behind, and the supervisor roll up his sleeve and go on up there and help him get that work out to get caught up. Mm-hmm. I've seen that, mm-hmm. and he was white.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody called each other by their name. Now, we would call Lottie Miss Lottie, but we also called Miss Elsie Miss Elsie, too. Because they were older than us.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the white girls on there, I called them by their name. Jewel, Fran, Brand, whatever their name was. They called me Johnny. That was it.
Did the white workers call the black woman supervisor by her first name? No.
They called her Miss Elsie.
They did too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Everybody called her Elsie Miss Elsie.
Okay.
So we'll give her a back, then we call her everything.
Now, by the time you left there in L.A., to come to L.A., what were you making?
Well, I think I was making about $30 a week because we were doing piecework. But in those days, $30 was a lot of money.
And were you able, so you were able to make out pretty well with that?
Done real well.
Because at one point you said you had something like a $16 welfare supplement to help you with rent.
Mm-hmm.
Did that continue the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then you said you decided to move to L.A. Your brothers decided that you should, they sent you a one-way ticket.
Yeah. The brother that just passed away, sent me a one-way ticket. Because my father passed away. He had a stroke on his 81st birthday, which was the 17th day of March in 1960. He passed away about 7-8 days later. So they couldn't come to the funeral. They was working, and they couldn't come. So they sent me money. I got him buried. Then my brother that passed away, Thomas, sent me a one-way ticket for me and my kids to come out here. Because he said, well, since we were the only one immediate family, mm-hmm. if something happened to me, they couldn't get back, mm-hmm. if something happened to them, I couldn't come back, so he just sent the ticket. My brother and daughter and sister-in-law had just left, they just left out of mm-hmm. here. They had been to Arkansas that summer. They brought my oldest daughter back in the car with them, they drove.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just me and four kids to come.
And you were pregnant
with
your smallest one. Mm-hmm. How long did you lived with your brother for a while, you said?
I lived with my brother for about 3 months, I guess. But I got off the train at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. I went to work at 7 o'clock Monday morning.
And you said that you went to work in the laundry where your sister-in-law was working. She got helped you get the job. Mm-hmm. How did your life change when you moved to L.A.?
Well, I guess I made more money of doing the same thing. I made more money. I put the kids in school. And I lived with my brother until I found a little one-bedroom house on the road where I made two rooms out of it, and the kitchen and back porch was fenced in, and it had a toilet back there. And we stayed there until I moved over in the project across the street, and I stayed in the project till 1967.
Now, you had to go through a whole procedure to get into the project, didn't you? Wasn't that a...
I saw where it, they were soliciting.
Oh.
They ran an ad. And I was, at that time, I was working in Compton. So I just got off the bus and went to the office and applied. And that was about 2 weeks. I was moved.
Which project was it?
Nickerson Garden.
Oh, it was Nickerson Garden. Because that was built during the war, I think, wasn't it?
No, it was built after the war.
Now, when you got here, you were pregnant with the youngest. And then when was she born?
Born, I came August 1960. She came March 17,
1961. And then you kept her for the first 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And who took care of her during that 6 months?
Oh, my next door neighbor.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And the others were all in school?
Uh-huh.
And then, so they were in school, then she went, stayed with your brother for a year and a half, 2 years. Okay.
But when she came back, that was after I was here.
Now, you joined the union as soon as you went to work at the laundry?
Yeah, you had to join the union.
And where was the laundry located? Was it?
The laundry I located was called Masters Linen and Supply. It's right off of Vermont, at Washington and Cordova.
Mm-hmm.
With Los Angeles.
So how did your routine, what was your routine like then? So once you moved into the project, you were working up at the laundry, your kids were in school,
mm-hmm.
What would be your daily routine? How did
the same
it
as it was when I was in Arkansas. You get up in the morning and you go to work. By that time, I didn't need a babysitter, not for the ones that were going to school. So I would make sure that their clothes were clean and everything the night before. I've always done that. Mm-hmm. I made sure that my clothes were together for the night
mm-hmm.
before. You know, and my daughter by now was about 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in junior high school. But she had decided that she wasn't going to school. When I'd go to work, she wouldn't go. That's when the welfare thing came in.
Oh. Now, you had said a couple of years ago when I did those other tapes
mm-hmm.
that you belong to some kind of group already in the housing project.
What happened was when I moved in the Nickerson, must have been in the January or February 62. I got up one morning, came downstairs, and the mailbox was slopped through
mm-hmm.
the front door, and there was a lot of paper on my floor at the door. I picked it up, and it was paper inviting you to a meeting at the housing development office, and it told the date and the time. And so I decided to go when I came home the next evening, and whatever it was now, and got ready and went to the meeting with quite a few people there. And it was called the Nickerson Garden Planning Organization, and what they do, they covered a lot of different things. They would go around the houses, see if people needed anything. They saw people's yard wasn't kept up. They would talk to people about keeping it up. That used to be a pretty beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
So they know, and the kids respected, and the parents made the kids respect the property and respect other people. And that's what it was all about.
So the focus was on, in effect, to keep the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
like the neighborhood
plan.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And was it all women?
Oh, no. The president was a man.
Mm-hmm.
And the housing manager was a man, and he was involved.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that pulled it together and asked people to help, you know, and they had it all laid out. And I think that must have been, they had a meeting before then, but they were asking people to participate.
Uh-huh.
That's why I got the thing through the wall. And some of them got in, was involved in politics, you know, and things like that. So it was a lot of stuff to get involved in.
Mm. Well, what are the kind of things that you get involved in there before you got sick and started?
Well, see, I liked the political part. So I had been talking to my sister, who I told you my half-sister, who had been here for years, and she's heavily involved into the political and talk with her and got to know her and know some people and that. And with some people running for office, and she knew them. And some of us that was in the organization, probably all of us got involved with one candidate or another, and that was something that I liked. So,
So what kind of work were you doing, the political work?
Volunteer work, you know, they had the headquarters up, and then they used to have what they call field deputy register of voters, where you could go, and I went down, took the training, became a deputy registered voter. They used to give you 20 cents a name, a signature, and I was doing real well with that. Sometimes I had $15-$70 extra money for registering voters. I go knock on the doors, and I had got my daughter back in school, and she got ready to graduate. That's where I bought and goes to register and vote. So that, you know, and then I would have, I would make my list of all the people that I registered to vote. And then whatever candidate campaign I was working in, I had a list already. Here's the first registered voters here. Yeah. You go talk to these people, go drop their literature off to those people that I had registered.
So you became a campaign.
Very involved.
Yeah. So by the time, by 63, you had already been doing this for a good year or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was one of the reasons that in those days you had to be in Los Angeles or in California 3 years before you qualify for what they call aid to needy children, and you had to go and wait and all that kind of stuff. And the man, they had all of mine was laid out when I got to the welfare office, because the president of this group took care of it through Supervisor Horn's office.
Mm-hmm. So it was a very politically conscious group and had political connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whose campaigns did you work on? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first one I got involved with was Mervyn Dominey, who is now a congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Augustus Hawkins, who just retired from the Congress,
mm-hmm.
and in this particular community here, the first black assembly person was elected here. He's dead now, Reverend F. Douglas Farrell. That's his big church. He built a big church up there. That I used to live right behind the church. So, and there had the person that had been representing this community had been there for 23 years. And so he was defeated, and Reverend Farrell was the third black person ever go to Sacramento, the second one to come out of here. So you know those kind of things.
Uh-huh. Now you've been very anchored in this same community, basically in the Los area, for 30 years.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Were there other kinds of before the beginning of the ANC Mothers, were there other kinds of community groups that you had gotten involved in?
No, except for the Dixon Garden Panel organization and the political work, not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I say, I had I got involved in the union. I didn't get a chance to work in that like I wanted to, because I got sick and I couldn't work no longer. The ANC Mothers came after I was on welfare for about 8 months.
Now, in the, what made you decide to get involved in the union? Do you remember?
Oh, well, let's say I became a member of the union, and it seemed like a good idea, you know. And at that time, I was working at in Compton at a laundry, and they didn't have a shop steward out there. And the people asked me if I would be that shop steward, and nobody was really worried to do it, you know. So I said, fine, because I always wanted to learn, you know, and I would check it out. And I said, well, I'll go and do the best I can. That's all I can promise you.
Did they give you steward training?
They gave you steward training. And then you go to the meetings, and it wasn't really hard. They didn't really do nothing.
Did you handle grievances?
You would have grievances, but, and they bounce them around. You know, you take from the worker to the band, you give it to the representative, you know, that kind of stuff. And they iron it out and come back really in there that long, you know.
That's the laundry and the relationship between the workers here compared to the laundry in Arkansas?
Well, I guess it was maybe, and it might have been me personally because I hadn't. I worked at the laundry in Lubbock so long, and I got to know everybody. Here, it was a little bit different. And then in most of your laundries here, you had a lot of Mexican-American workers also. And language was different than it was there. So, and more or less, until you get to know somebody, really, you kind of just kind of alone. But in Arkansas, it was altogether different.
Well, do you think people were less friendly here?
Yes, much less friendly here. They are less friendly here, period, than they are in Arkansas, back in the South. Anywhere in the South, people are very, very friendly, black and white, or whatever in the South than they are in the West.
Did you miss Little Rock after your first time?
Oh, I still miss it. I would try to get my husband to move back to Louisiana. He won't go.
How about the relationship between the white and black workers here compared to Arkansas? Was that different?
It is different, I think.
In what ways?
Well, there don't seem to be as much communication with the black and white workers as much as it is in Arkansas. And it might be, I guess you have to understand though, in Arkansas, most of the workers, white workers, were just as poor and needed to work as bad as the black ones did. So, in that particular workplace, it just was not a black and white issue. I don't know whether it was because of the person who owned it or what, but in all of those laundries, I know some people that worked in other laundries, and like I said, I think I worked in two different laundries, because the first laundry I worked in Arkansas was called D&D, and I think they told me he was German, I believe, but it was black and white people who worked in there, and we didn't have no different lunch benches and different restrooms and, you know, different kind. They had a men's room and a women's room.
And how about here?
Here, they all went to the same ones.
And how about lunch?
Well, people just grouped together with lunch. And now, this big lunch that I went to work at, they had a lunch room. They had lunch counters. You can sit anywhere you want. And I saw people sit with, you know, Mexican Americans or Mexican people sitting with other people, but they seem to group more. I think it just depends on the individual. They seem to group more with themselves.
But it seems like it took you a while to get on your feet in terms of new relationships and friendships and that sort of thing.
I know my brother, and because I know a lot of people out here from Arkansas. But when I come, I didn't, you know, this is a big old city, So you didn't have no way of getting around, and I didn't have a car and all that kind of stuff. So on weekends, I was back to my routine, washing, ironing, getting ready for Monday morning.